Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode SP27, Yule and New Year 2011 to 2012. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Thank you very much for downloading our joint Yule and New Year holiday special.
Yes, thank you. We hope you enjoy the show. We've got a lot in it, haven't we?
Yes, that's true. We've got a great piece about the Celtic origins of our many Yule traditions, a wonderful piece about the Wild Hunt, another moving story by Chris Jolliffe, a poem, and five pieces of fabulous music.
Can't wait.
But before we start, I'd like to send out an Irish Yule blessing to all our listeners and their families.
Oh, that's a lovely idea. You start.
The light of the Christmas star to you.
The warmth of home and hearth to you.
The cheer and goodwill of friends to you.
The hope of a childlike heart to you.
The joy of a thousand angels to you.
The love of the sun and peace to you.
Beautiful. I really love these Irish blessings. They're great, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Well, we'd better get cracking and start with some news and views.
Okay. Right. Do you remember the wonderful Robin and Sherwood series that was on the screens back in the 1970s?
Strangely enough, yes.
She says strangely enough because we've just been watching it.
So, yes, it's very fresh in my memory, actually.
Well, anyway, there have been several attempts to revive it. But now, all of the original cast are behind a new attempt to make a new series called Robin of Sherwood 20 years after. And they want to make a pilot to sell the show to the major networks.
Wow, well, that's brilliant. The original series is beautifully crafted by Richard Carpenter and covered the stories of Robin Hood, Herne the Hunter, and quite a lot of folklore. It was also a mixture of kind of magic and mystery and some fantastic imagery that's inspired films, people and shows ever since.
That's true. Stansfilm, the company that are making the pilot, are sending out a call to anyone in the industry to help with it, or, if you're not in the industry, to make a donation.
You have got details of that in the show notes, yes?
You bet.
Excellent.
And you can find the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com. Shall we have some music?
Yes, let's. We have a superb piece of music from Jennifer Cutting and her Ocean Orchestra called The Song of Solstice from the album of the same name.
Great. So let's listen to Jennifer Cutting and The Song of Solstice.
Tis the gateway of the year, short is day and dark is hour, praises as our newborn sun journeys back to its full power. Praise the sun and solstice high, thrill the wind and weather, welcome you all with frost and fire, and sing we all together. Blessed be the darkness deep, all we learn there well worth knowing, as below the seeds long sleep nourished hope for springtide's growing. Praise the song of solstice high, through the wind and weather, welcome you all with frost and fire, and sing we all together. Thank you. memories of the old year past, burning in the old confider, making way for greater gifts, glowing with our heart's desire. Praise the sun of solstice time, through the wind and weather, welcome you with frost and fire, and sing we all together. Merry part, merry meet again. Strangers on the start, now are friends until the end. And raise the song of solstice high, through the wind and weather. Welcome you with frost and fire, and sing we all together. Raise the song of solstice high, through the wind and weather. Welcome you with frost and fire, and sing we all together.
Oh, that was a real sing-along. A great folk song. I can see that being sung in pubs and homes all over.
Yes, it's one of those catchy ones, isn't it? Well, Jennifer's album, The Song of Solstice, celebrates the things that all spiritual traditions share, which is why I thought it would be a great way to start off the show. And the title track is all about giving thanks for both darkness and light, mixing contemplation with celebration. If you think about it, that's exactly what goes on around that time of year.
I suppose it does, that's true. Thank you, Jennifer, for allowing us to play your track. And you can find out more about Jennifer and her music in the show notes.
So what else goes on at that time of year then? Have you ever wondered what the origins of the traditions that we follow every year are?
I have, that's for sure. And more particularly, do any of them have their roots in Celtic culture?
Well, this next segment should answer your questions. Let's listen to the traditions of Yule, which I've put together from bits and pieces I found across the internet.
Oh, fascinating. The traditions of Yule.
The Holly King. From the Celtic tradition, we get a pair of ancient images who fight for supremacy at Yule. The Holly King and the Oak King are probably constructs of the Druids to whom these two trees were highly sacred. The Oak King, King of the Waxing Year, kills the Holly King, the King of the Waning Year, at Yule. The Oak King then reigns until midsummer, when the two battle again, this time with the Holly King as victor. The Holly King, who's evolved into the present-day Santa Claus, wears red, dons a sprig of holly in his hat, and drives a team of 8, total number of solar sabbats, deer, an animal sacred to the Celtic gods. Holly and mistletoe are traditional to the season through commemoration of the battle. The holly was hung in honour of the Holly King, the mistletoe, which grows high in the branches of oak and apple trees, in honour of the Oak King. The Oak King and the Holly King are mortal enemies at midsummer and Yule, but they are two sides of a whole, and neither could exist without the other.
The reindeer. Santa's reindeer most probably evolved from Hörn, the Celtic horned god. 8 reindeer pull Santa's sleigh, representative of the 8 solar sabbats. In British lore, the stag is one of the 5 oldest and wisest animals in the world, embodying dignity, power, and integrity. From their late autumn dramatic rutting displays, stags represented strength, sexuality, and fertility, as evidenced by multiple prehistoric excavations of stag antler ritual costumes. The wearing of stag antlers in folk dance recreated the sacred male shaman figure called the Lord of the Wild Hunt, Cernunnos, or Hörn the Hunter, among others. He who travels between worlds, escorting animal spirits to the afterlife and sparking wisdom and fertility in this world. Likewise, the stag's branching antlers echo the growth of vegetation. In America, the stag represents male ideals, the ability to walk one's talk and powerfully, peacefully blend stewardship and care of the tribe with sexual and spiritual integrity. To the Celts, all deer were especially symbolic of nurturing, gentle and loving femaleness. White deer hide was used to make tribal women's clothing. White deer, called fairy cattle, were commonly believed to offer milk to fairies. In Britain, amongst the Druids, some men experienced life-transforming epiphanies from spiritual visions or visitations by white hinds, balancing and healing their inner feminine energy.
The Yule Log. The Yule Log is a large and extremely hard log, which is burned in the hearth as part of a traditional Yule or Christmas celebration in several European cultures. It can be part of the Winter Solstice Festival or the 12 Days of Christmas, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, or Twelfth Night. The expression Yule Log has also come to refer to log-shaped Christmas cakes, also known as chocolate logs, or bûche de Noël. The Yule Log is related to other Christmas and Yuletide traditions, such as the Ashen Faggot. The term Yule Log is not the only term used to refer to the custom. In the northeast of England, it was commonly called a Yule Clog, and in the country's Midlands and West Country, the term Yule Block was also used. In the county of Lincolnshire, the term Glule Block was found, and in Cornwall, the term Stock of the Mock was as well. In other parts of the British Isles, different terms were used. For instance, in Wales, the log was often referred to as a Bloc Inguilian, meaning the festive block or the festival block, while in Scotland, Yule Carline, meaning the Christmas old wife, was used, and in Ireland, the term Bloc na Nollag, which meant the Christmas block, was used.
The Yule Log was originally an entire tree. It was carefully chosen and brought into the house with great ceremony, with the purpose being to provide maximum warmth and endurance. And while references are anecdotal, it seems to be a tradition that morphed into early European Christian tradition of the 12 Days of Christmas. Whilst within 20th century Europe and North America, it was predominantly a reference to the burning of the largest log possible at or around Christmas. Because there are no accounts of the custom in Great Britain prior to the 17th century, some historians and folklorists have theorised that it was not an ancient British custom, but it was in fact imported into Britain from continental Europe in the early modern period, possibly from Flanders in Belgium, where the tradition thrived in this period.
The first mention of the Yule Log in Britain is a written account by the clergyman Robert Herrick from the 1620s or 1630s. Herrick called the tradition a Christmas log and said that it was brought into a farmhouse by a group of males who were then rewarded with free beer from the farmer's wife. Herrick claimed the fire used to burn the log was always started with a remnant from the log that had been burned in the previous year's festivities. He also said that the Yule Log's role was primarily one of bringing prosperity and protection from evil. By keeping the remnant of the log all year long, the protection was said to remain across the year. There are many reports of rivalries occurring between members of a community as to who had the largest log. No comment. Absolutely no comment whatsoever.
I didn't say a thing.
I was going to say nothing changes, was it really? But, you know.
Yes, right, okay, the largest log, absolutely.
There were many reports of rivalries occurring between members of a community as to who had the largest log. The traditions of the Yule Log died out in Britain in the latter 19th and 20th century because of, according to historian Ronald Hutton,
the reduction in farm labour and the disappearance of the old-fashioned open hearths.
In English folklore, Father Christmas was often depicted carrying a Yule log.
The winter solstice falls on the shortest day of the year, 21st of December roughly, and was celebrated in Britain long before the arrival of Christianity. The Druids, the Celtic priests, would cut the mistletoe that grew on the oak and apple trees and give it as a blessing. Oaks were seen as sacred, and the winter fruit of the mistletoe was a symbol of life in the dark winter months. It was also the Druids who began the tradition of the Yule log. The Celts thought that the sun stood still for 12 days in the middle of winter, and during this time, a log was lit to conquer the darkness, banish evil spirits, and bring luck for the coming year. Superb stuff! Who would have thought there was so much background to the Yule log and so many varied origins?
I know, it's fascinating, isn't it? We've got some more information coming on a little later about the Wild Hunt and the Yule log. But before we listen to some more, let's learn more of the ever-turning wheel and listen to the amazing Dave the Bard with his track The Wheel from his album The Spirit of Albion.
As the sunrise on the shore to stay, my crying greets the dawn. Tears of dew form on the web as I am reborn. Feel new life spring from the earth as the mother of all life gives birth. Though I am a child, I will soon become a man. Feel the warmth upon your skin, sense the animal inside. As ever a creature on land feels the rising tide. The natural rhythms of the land as the goddess takes my hand into the forest green with the horned man. Ah. Turned to gold, my time is drawing near. I see my lady smile at me, inside I feel no fear. As she raises the scythe above her head, blood spills on the earth as I fall dead. In the other world I guard her throne till she returns.
Was Dave the Bard's beautiful track, The Wheel, from his album, The Spirit of Albion.
Ooh, and talking about The Spirit of Albion,
yeah,
there is a trailer for the new film.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it's available on Facebook, and it's also available at thespiritofalbionmovie.com as well. So go and have a look. It's absolutely fabulous. I can't wait.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned more about the Yule Log. What did you mean?
Well, there are several variants on what's called the woodcutter's poem.
Right.
This poem teaches us which woods to use for the Yule log and what effect burning them has. It's a very old country lore that's still remembered in rhyme.
Brilliant. I wonder whether there are any links to the trees of the Oham.
I don't know. I think there might be a few if you listen carefully. But let's have a listen to the woodcutter's poem. Woodcutter's Poem, or A Dartmoor Log Song.
Logs to burn, logs to burn, logs to burn, logs to save and a coal to turn. Here's a word to make you wise when you hear the woodman's cries. Never heed his usual tale that he has good logs for sale, but listen to these lines and really learn the proper kind of logs to burn. Oak logs will warm you well if they're old and dry. Larch logs of pine will smell, but the sparks will fly. Beech logs for Christmas time. Yew logs heat well. Scotch logs it is a crime for anyone to sell. Birch logs will burn too fast. Chestnut scarce at all. Hawthorn logs are good to last if you cut them in the fall. Holly logs will burn like wax. You should burn them green. Elm logs like smouldering flax. No flame to be seen. Pear logs and apple logs, oh, they will scent your room. Cherry logs across the dock smell like flowers in bloom. But ash logs, all smooth and grey, burn them green or old. Buy up all that come your way. They're worth their weight in gold.
That was brilliant. Now, that particular version comes from the pantomime Mother Goose.
Does it really?
Yes, it does.
Incredible.
Yes, and there's another version in the episode that goes along with this show, as well as a most amazing version in a song by Cernunnos Rising called A Fire Fit for a Queen.
All the trees that grow so fair, old England to adorn, greater none beneath the sun than oak, ash and thorn. Oak and ash and thorn. Beechwood fires burn bright and clear. Logs are kept burnt for a year. Chestnuts only could they see before a long time laid away. Make a fire or fell the tree. Death within your house will be. But as that's new and as that's old is fit for a queen with a crown of gold. An ash that's green, an ash that's brown is fit for a queen with a golden crown. And fir logs burn too fast. They blaze up bright and do not last. It is, as the Irish said, that hawthorn makes the sweetest bread. Elmwood burns like churchyard mold. Even the flames are cold. But ash that's new and ash that's old is fit for a queen with a crown of gold. Ash that's green and ash that's brown is fit for a queen, a golden crown. Poplar gives a bit of smoke. It burns your eyes and makes you choke. Applewood will scent your room with an incense-like perfume. Oaken logs, if dry and old, keeps away the winter's cold. But ash that's new and ash that's old is fit for a queen with a crown of gold. Ash that's green and ash that's brown is fit for a queen with a golden crown.
That was A Fire Fit for a Queen by Kernunos Rising from his incredible album, Wild Soul.
Oh, it's beautiful. He has a wonderful voice, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, very powerful. And combined with all the other talented musicians that George has pulled together, you can imagine the album being a soundtrack for an epic stage show production of Celtic and natural themes.
Oh, yeah. Although I'd just like to see them live.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Find out more about George Nicholas and Kernunos Rising in the show notes.
Wonderful. Now, do you think it's time for a story?
Yes, definitely. We have another amazing story from our bard, Chris Jolliffe, called Midwinter.
Midwinter by Chris Jolliffe.
Silver bells jingling in the sharp, cold air, far off and high in the swirling snow. Unseen to all but children's eyes, with beard of white and gown of red, the Christmas spirit, Santa Claus, dear old Saint Nick, our jolly friend, flies past with merry laugh and twinkling eye. The tinkling reins are pulled, the silver gift-filled sleigh begins to turn, And for a second there, those young wide eyes can meet him face to face, his head seen horned through reindeer antlers. And past the turkey, past the mince pies, past the bumper film-filled TV times, through the tinsel, songs and Christmas cards, between the needles of the evergreens, an older time is found, wherein a low sun gleams like thin gold on chill white ice. Its journey brief on this midwinter's eve, longest night to shortest day, where beer is broached and wine is poured, red as the steaming meat, the cattle culled, to thin and save the herd, to fatten folk to live through winter's aching cold. Fires flame and flicker on this eve, through time, from tribal gatherings to hissing brands, torches held high by laughing lads caparisoned in black, capering through streets with lights held high, with masks and raucous shouts, the wren boys all have come. Wassail! Wassail! From door to door they dance, hold high the tattered feathers on their pole, their blessings gained through food and drink free given, fire in the darkness, horns upon their heads. But not all doors will rattle to the knocks, nor shall all thresholds so be crossed. Away from song and shouting, leaving glow-windowed homes behind, and out across the hills, where silent in the evening mists and chill, a low and ancient arch stands still. The open way yawns black. Within is darkness, soundless, still as death, where bones lie thick with ages past. What hands long gone to dust have carved, none sees. Light does not touch these stony Stygian walls. Not welcome spring, not summer's warmth, nor autumn's radiant glow has ever quickened this cold grave of rocks. Not from the long-lost age when it was made, and on through all the years to come. So shall it be, a den of darkness in a world grown chill and still with silent snow. Beyond the silent mouth, the sun goes down, an orange flame that gives with glory to the brief day its farewell. Then all is shadowed into dusk. The only light is now held tight within stout walls, fed like a child's life, weak and precious. Carefully, to keep the glow and warmth within and freezing darkness out. For all the world is given over now to terrors, loosed upon this longest night of all. Doors that were answered to the briefest knock of Renboy's hands will now not open, not for cheers nor tears, not to the whispered voice, nor raging threats, nor laughter wild, not to the scrabbling claw or grunting roar that fills with fear the dreading heart. In tight shut doors and eaves, in horseshoes hung upon the door, in herb and leaf and chant shall hope be placed, that all these hunts beneath the moon for flesh and soul shall pass them by this night. And all the hours of shades and shadow, one by one, pass by. In that still place of darkness, darker still, down that cold passageway of stone, within the very heart of blackness, in that tomb, within that womb, there, something stirs. Only the ghosts may hear the gasps and cries, the ragged breath, the laboured groans. Through all the long dark hours of the night, the stones bear silent witness to the agony, the racking sobs, the tear-streaked, twisting, writhing knot of pain. As far above the lightless weight of rock, the ice-bright stars wheel round, as the white moon completes her silent path, A tortured wail echoes among the bones. But not alone. A thinner, higher cry there is, growing stronger as the other fades. And sudden, as the sound is heard within the chamber's walls along the passageway, beyond the stony arch, a golden ball is seen. And as if liquid gold were poured, a wash of light sets all the walls to amber richness within the quickening, life-giving brilliance of the sun. The walls from unseen blackness burst to flame, and there are seen the spiraling whirls of life. And in that glorious glow, the bright midwinter sun shines on the smiling face. A newborn child. That smooth brow, clear and golden in the light, in the months to come shall wear with sunlit radiance spreading times. The lingering hours of night shall wane. The days, by slow degrees, grow long. Call him Pryderi, Bel, Genunos, Lu. The horned god is come into the world. The sleigh bells chime, the reindeer turn, and the child's eyes blink, and Santa's jolly ho, ho, ho echoes into the snow-filled night. A merry midwinter to all, and to all, a happy Yule.
Wow, how exciting! He's described the birth of the Holly King, or Kernunos, or Hearn, or whatever you want to call him, really well, hasn't he?
Yes. Thank you, Chris. A very powerful piece of writing. And now to continue with the theme of Hearn's blessing, we are proud to be able to bring you S.J. Tucker and her Hymn to Hearn.
You can say your prayers, work your rites, burn your little candles day and night. You can shimmy till dawn to the pounding drums, but you best be ready when the horn one comes, yeah. Sound of a hunting horn, you dance a ring in the gathering storm. If the solstice time gets your panties in a wad, it's just the coming of the horn god. He will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Hey. Hunter who tracks outside of time, guardian lord of ancient rhyme, brother stag in the musky glen, consort of the goddess in a woodland den. We call you forth as we make our way, walking in your power every day. Guide us true in our hunt this night, maybe even later in the great rite. He will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Blessed are the children of the horned one.
To the sound of a hunting. If you dance a ring in the gathering storm, so revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. But you best be ready, little one. You best be ready. better when the horn one comes. He's gonna call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
And that was fabulous S.J. Tucker with her wonderful song Hymn to Herne from her album Blessings. Sets your blood pounding with a smile on your lips, doesn't it?
What can I say?
I'll tell you what, don't even try.
All right then, okay. But even so, an astounding piece of music. And thank you to SJ for allowing us to play it.
And now that the Horned One walks amongst us, let's learn a bit about the Wild Hunt.
Oh yes, I've been looking forward to this.
The Wild Hunt.
When winter winds blow and the Yule fires are lit, it is best to stay indoors, safely shut away from the dark paths and the wild heaths. Those who wander out by themselves during the Yule nights may hear a sudden rustling through the tops of the trees, a rustling that might be the wind, though the rest of the wood is still. But then the barking of dogs fills the air, and the host of wild souls sweeps down, fire flashing from the eyes of the black hounds and the hooves of the black horses. Kveldulf Hagen Gunderson, Mountain Thunder.
In the Celtic lands, across most of Northern Europe, belief in the Wild Hunt was once widespread. In the islands, little remains of the belief today. The form of the Wild Hunt, or Raging Host, varied across each of the geographical locations in which the tradition was found. But the basic idea was generally the same. A phantasmal leader, accompanied by a horde of hounds and men, hurtled through the night sky, their passing marked by a tumultuous racket of pounding hooves, howling dogs and raging winds. The hunters may be dead, or the fairies, often in folklore connected with the dead. The hunters may be an identified lost soul, a deity or spirit of either gender, or maybe a historical or legendary figure. The quarry of this spectral horde also varies. Norse legend, for example, suggests an object such as a boar, a wild horse, or even magical maidens. Later Christian influences had the Wild Hunt summoning the souls of evildoers, sinners, and unbaptized infants. But one thing was common to all. To see the Wild Hunt was a very bad omen, usually foretelling a time of strife or death.
Herne and other hunt leaders. Traditions of a wild hunt also existed in areas away from Norse influence. In Wales, for example, the leader of the hunt was Gwyn ap Nudd. The Lord of the Dead, Gwyn ap Nudd, was followed by his pack of white hounds with blood-red ears. These red-eared hounds are also found in northern England, where they were known as Gabriel hounds. Their appearance was also a portent of doom. In southern England, it was Herne the Hunter who led the hunt, while elsewhere it is also referred to as the Herla thing, from the mythical King Herla, its supposed leader. According to the 12th century writer, Walter Mapp, this household of Herlathingus was last seen in the marches of Wales and Hereford in the first year in the reign of Henry II, about noonday. They travelled as we do, with carts and sumpter horses, pack saddles and panniers, hawks and hounds, and a concourse of men and women. And those who saw them first raised the whole country against them with horns and shouts, and because they were unable to wring a word from them by addressing them, they made ready to extort an answer. And then, however, they rose up into the air and vanished on a sudden. This may have Odinic connections. Some suggest the element Herla relates to Herion, one of Odin's many names, and refers particularly to his role as the leader of the dead warrior who filled the Hall of Heroes, Valhalla. That this Herla, or Herl, may have a distinct root is evident from a number of similar variants. In 1123, for example, it was referred to as the Familia Herlecchini by Ordericus Vitalis. In France, it was La Meni Herlecchine, while in England, we find Melites Herluini. Also in England, the historical figures St. Guthlac, 683-714, and Hereward the Wake, who died around about 1070, were reported to have participated in the wild hunt. And in the Peterborough Chronicle, there is an account of the wild hunt's appearance at night, beginning with the appointment of a disastrous abbot for the monastery, Henri d'Angely, in 1127. Many men both saw and heard a great number of huntsmen hunting. Huntsmen were black, huge and hideous, and they rode on black horses and on black he-goats, and their hounds were jet black, with eyes like saucers, and horrible. And this was seen in the very deer park of the town of Peterborough, and in all the woods that stretched from that same town to Stamford. And in the night the monks heard them sounding and winding their horns.
Witnesses were said to have given their number as 20 or 30, and it's said, in effect, that this went on for 9 weeks, ending at Easter. Orderic Vitalis, 1075 to 1142, an English monk at St. Evroul en Ouche in Normandy, reported a similar cavalcade seen in January 1091, which he said were Herlican's troop. While these early reports of wild hunts were recorded by clerics and portrayed as diabolic, in late medieval romances, such as Sir Orfeo, the hunters are rather from a fairy otherworld, where the wild hunt was the hosting of the fairies. Its leaders also varied, but they include Gwydion, Gwynabwy, King Arthur, Nuada, and King Hurla. Many legends are told of their origins, as in that of Dando and his dogs, or the Dandy Dogs. Dando, wanting a drink but having exhausted what his huntsman carried, declared he would go to hell for it. A stranger came and offered a drink, only to steal Dando's game, and then Dando himself, with his dogs, giving chase. The sight was long claimed to have been seen in the area. Another legend recounted how King Hurla, having visited the fairy king, was warned not to step down from his horse until the greyhound he carried jumped down. He found that 3 centuries had passed during his visit, and those of his men who dismounted crumbled into dust. He and his men are still riding because the greyhound has still yet to jump down.
Don't blame him.
The myth of the wild hunt has through the ages been modified to accommodate other gods and folk heroes, among them King Arthur, and more recently in Dartmoor legend, Sir Francis Drake. At Cadbury Castle in Somerset, an old lane near the castle was called King Arthur's Lane, and even in the 19th century, the idea survived that on wild winter nights, the king and his hounds could be heard rushing along it.
Wistman's Wood in Devon, England. In certain parts of Britain, the hunt is said to be that of hellhounds chasing sinners, or the unbaptized. In Devon, these are known as Yeth, Heath, or Wisht hounds. In Wales, the Cwn Annwn, the hounds of the underworld. And in Somerset, as Gabriel Ratchets, or Retchets dogs. According to H.A. Gerber,
the object of this phantom hunt varied greatly, and was either that of a visionary boar or a wild horse, according to unbreasted maidens who were caught and borne away, bound only once in 7 years, or wood nymphs called moss maidens who were thought to represent the autumn leaves torn from the trees and whirled away by the wintry gale.
Whatever the case, the hunt was most often seen in the winter, when the winds blew the fiercest. An abundance of different tales of the wild hunt are recorded in Germany. In most tales, the identity of the hunter is not made clear. In others, it's a mythological figure named Vaul, Vaur, Vaurka, Vod, or Vid, who is thought to be derived from an ancient Germanic god of the wind and the dead. Warden, a mythological figure named Fri, Fwick, Fu, Holder, or Holla, who is thought to be derived from the Germanic goddess Freya or Frigg. An undead noble, most often called Count Hackelberg or Count Edenberg, who is cursed to hunt eternally because of his misbehaviour during his lifetime, and, in some versions, died from injuries of a slain boar's tusk.
Sometimes the tales associate the hunter with a dragon or devil. The hunter is most often riding a horse, seldom a horse-drawn carriage, and usually has several hounds in his company. If prey is mentioned, it's most often a young woman, either guilty or innocent. The majority of the tales deal with some person encountering the wild hunt. If this person stands up against the hunters, he will be punished. If he helps the hunt, he'll be awarded money, gold, or most often a leg of a slain animal or human, which is often cursed in a way that makes it impossible to be rid of it. In this case, the person has to find a priest or magician able to ban it, or to trick the wild hunt into taking the leg back by asking for salt, which the hunt cannot deliver. In many versions, a person staying right in the middle of the road during the encounter is safe. Across Europe, the wild hunt appears at various times of the year, but most commonly over the Yule season. This is not surprising, as Yule was regarded as the season in which supernatural visitations were most common. In particular, the spirits of the dead were allowed to return. This ties in with the idea that the hunt represented a procession of the dead. These times are intercalendary periods in Celtic and Teutonic year reckoning, the paradoxical time between the times, when the crack appears and the paths between the worlds are laid open. They are periods of ritual reversal, when the dead enter the world of the living and the living enter the world of the dead. Thus, the myth of the wild hunt seems to be part of the drama of the turning year. So if you are out on Yuletide's Eve and you hear the thundering of horses' hooves and the sound of hunting horns, take cover quickly, and whatever you do, don't look up.
Great.
Bring you our last piece of music for this holiday special. Let's have a promo for another great podcast.
Hey?
You have got a promo for us, haven't you?
Well, yes. Well, you know I've been doing a lot of podcast listening in preparation for the upcoming shows.
Yes.
Well, I kind of got caught up in a podiobook story.
Oh, right. Well, tell us about it then.
Okay. It's set in the later Dark Ages, and it tells of life and adventure in Saxon England at a time when the Saxons have fought, conquered and settled in place of the indigenous Welsh, who at that time were the British. So it tells the Celtic story, but from the other point of view. I'm finding it fascinating.
It does sound fascinating. Let's have a listen to the promo.
Right. So this is the promo for the podcast book called The Amber Treasure by Richard Denning, available from podiobooks.com.
The Amber Treasure by Richard Denning, 6th century Northumbria. Cerdic, nephew of the great warrior Cynric, dreams of glorying battle and of writing his name into the sagas. When war comes for real, though, his sister is kidnapped, his family betrayed, and his uncle's legendary sword stolen. Cerdic must find the courage to avenge his family's loss, rescue his sister, and finally return home with the sword. To find out what happens, listen to The Amber Treasure, read by the author. Treachery in Dark Age Northumbria.
Well, that sounds great. How can you get hold of it, though?
Well, if you go to the podiobooks.com website and type Amber Treasure into the search box, you'll find out all about it and how to subscribe for free. I'm about halfway through at the moment, and his description of the battle scenes really do get you involved and excited.
Brilliant. I'll have to have a listen. And now for our last piece of music.
Oh, yes. This rounds the show off beautifully, doesn't it?
Yes. I've been talking to an amazing band on the other side of the world who've just experienced the summer solstice. So their track, Solstice Evergreen, is particularly relevant as it crosses the globe and unites southern and northern hemispheres.
Yes. We've had the full circle of the year, the life of the horned god, and all across the globe, all in one show.
It kind of just happened. In fact, the show almost wrote itself.
Okay. So, tell us about the wonderful Spiral Dance and their track Solstice Evergreen.
Sure. Well, Spiral Dance plays some incredible high-energy folk and Celtic music. Adrienne, their vocalist, has always been surrounded by myth and magic, and Spiral Dance was her way of putting these feelings into music. She has an amazing team backing her up, and this track, Solstice Evergreen, comes from their album, The Quickening.
Scene from an old picture postcard of Victorian ladies with skates on their feet, of ponds frozen over and boughs hung with ice tips, and through frosty panes watched the snow and the sleet, and the smoke ventured out from the soot-blackened chimneys and shimmered beneath an icy cold moon. Inside an evergreen stands in the corner, and a bright blazing fire to keep out the gloom. There's holly and ivy and white mistleberry. The sun is in hiding, his face he can't show. So fill up your glasses so we can be merry, while rosy red cheeks by the firelight glow. Under the streetlights they'll gather together, their shivering voices will ring out the song to sing in the yule, regardless of weather, and brighten the darkness all the night long. And the mamas perform their plays from the ages. In comes King George, a man of courage bold, while out in the orchards we'll go a-sailing and sup on spice cider to keep out the cold. There's holly and ivy and white mistleberry. The sun is in hiding, his face you can't show. So fill up your glasses so we can be merry, while rosy red cheeks by the firelight glow. Changing places, and Jack Frost is wearing his new winter vest, while under the woodpile old Jack Green is sleeping to awaken in spring from his long dreamy rest. So on this yuletide we'll gather together beneath the sign of the ancient god's horns, as the new year beckons through cold misty weather. We'll raise a toast as the sun is reborn.
There's holly and ivy and white mistleberry. The sun is in hiding, his face you can't show. So fill up your glasses so we can be merry, while rosy red cheeks by the firelight glow.
Of Victorian ladies with skates on their feet, of ponds frozen over and boughs hung with ice tips, and through frosty panes watched the snow and the sleet. And the smoke ventured out and the soot blackened chimneys and shimmered beneath an icy cold moon. But inside an evergreen stands in the corner, and a bright blazing fire to keep out the gloom.
There's holly and ivy and white mistleberry. The sun is in hiding, face you can't show. So fill up your glasses so we can be merry, while rosy red cheeks by the firelight glow. There's holly and ivy and white mistleberry. The sun is in hiding, his face you can't show. So fill up your glasses so we can be merry, while rosy red cheeks by the firelight glow.
Wow, they're great. Powerful imagery and energy to match it. That was Spiral Dance with Solstice Evergreen from their album The Quickening.
And a big thank you to Adrienne and the crew for allowing us to play their music.
We'd also like to extend those thanks to Kenunas Rising and S.J. Tucker, who've also given us permission to bring you their music. Keep your ears well peeled in the future, folks.
Yeah, there's some fabulous bands, aren't there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've come to the end of our show. But as we started the show with a blessing for you all, I'd like to leave you a blessing for the new year.
That's a great idea. Is it another Irish blessing?
Yes, it is. Are you ready?
Yep, sure.
May the coming year bring you...
For every storm a rainbow, for every tear a smile.
For every care a promise, and a blessing in each trial.
For every problem life sends, a faithful friend to share.
For every sigh a sweet song, and an answer for each prayer.
And with that, we'd like to wish you...
Húlvár!
Circle for that clip of the old Rabbi Burns classic.
So their track Solstice Evergreen is particularly relevant.
Relevant. It's an elegant track that's
it
relevant.
It is, yes. In the latter 19th and 20th century. Because of, according to historian Ronald. The traditions.
This household of Herlingus.
What?
Superb stuff. Who would have thought there was so much background to the Wild Hunt? See, can't do that.
Because he's not there.
He's not there anymore. Okay.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. Available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. Find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkenstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.